Hey, this is Brian Beacock, and you're listening to Ultimate Despair Reprise.
Are you feeling the despair yet?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ultimate Despair Reprise, a Danganronpa recap podcast going through the whole Danganronpa series, one murder at a time. I am your ultimate host, Kyrie.
And I'm your ultimate podcaster, Jennifer Uncle.
And I'm really sad. Won't someone come fuck me? I'm Jackie.
Don't worry,
this goof ties into the chapter.
Well, that's it. You made the goof and you didn't even say your name.
Really?
I literally did say my name. Fuck you, Kiri. You were laughing so you didn't hear it.
Okay, well, I'm gonna have to just check the tapes for that one.
Well, anyway, I'm with us. I don't know what's going on here. And I don't know if I'm gonna find out.
Well, I don't know either, but we are certainly going to try. We are covering the daily life portion of Danganronpa 1, Trigger Happy Havoc, Chapter 3. And folks,
it's lame.
It's lame. Yeah, we start out on a really sour note. Like we're supposed to have this emotional moment of like Aoi crying in bed because her friends have been killed.
Oh, but her ass and titty are all the way out.
Yeah.
And she has severed her fucking spine to show you.
Yeah, like, just
ass. She's like, hey, I'm really sad, come fuck me. Hey, God, I'm so sad. Do you want to rail me? Do you want to just fucking bone down with me? I'm sad and I love donuts.
It's really kind of obnoxious, especially considering, like, if you listen to, like, the audio, like, the voice actress is doing a really good job. Like,
oh, yeah, she's killing it on this scene.
But, like, it still is, like,
but the
just...
artist was like,
just makes it even worse.
Sad, ready to bone.
Like, they managed to just make it worse.
It really reminded me of Grimgar, Fantasy of Ash. Like, if you remember that show came out
I have
a couple
no
years ago.
What is she talking about?
I am not sure.
It was kind of a deconstruction of Isekai, and one of the big criticisms of Grimgar was that it actually had a pretty extended sequence where the characters were mourning their dead friend. Spoilers, I guess. But it was constantly undercut by the fact that the show had constant fan service shots, like it wasn't confident enough in its own material, so it would be pulling shit, like the exact opening of this chapter, completely straight-faced, constantly, and that is like, I got PTSD flashback to like fucking 2015 with this.
Well, at the very least, I can say that, like, the games do chill out with that, like, later on. Like, because, I don't know, it's a whole thing. But anyway, Aoi Asahina, very upset in bed,
Very bangable, am I right, bros?
Sure would have fucked the sad out of her.
But I did write down in my notes, like, you know, this scene bothered me because it's a lot of missed potential. Because Aoi is... I actually really like Aoi as a character. Like, she is cheery and she's bubbly, but, like, it's very heavily implied that, like, she does that because if you think too much about the situation that you're in a hopeless situation, it's just gonna keep you from doing anything useful. So, I would kind of, like, if I were to redo this scene, like, again, if like, they dedicated a CG to this, and obviously the artist is skilled, they just didn't have the right mind. I was thinking, like, either,
I put that more on the, the director. Yeah, that's more on the, you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but the direction was poor, and if it had good direction, I would say what you would do is you would make it a long shot of her room and her just lying in bed staring at the ceiling, and then you'd pan out, and the room would look, and because of the, like, the spacing of the room, it would make the shot feel really claustrophobic. And it would kind of get you into her headspace, and then maybe instead of, like, oh, I'm hungry, I should go get donuts, that'll cheer me up, it should just be like, you know what, I'm getting a little antsy, I should go for a midnight walk, or something. You know, something to, like, kind of, something that ties into, like, of course, she's athletic, you know, if she, when she, she'd have that pent-up energy, and when, you know, that stress is getting to her, she, the first, her brain would kick in, she'd, like, maybe a midnight jog or a walk or something, you know. That would, rather than, you know, the writers going, oh, you know, Ellie, she likes donuts.
Like, anyway, she says she likes donuts. Jen, what does she do next?
After she mentions that she'd like to get some donuts to deal with her grief, she hears a loud whirring sound that's coming from the bathhouse. And in what's probably one of the funniest out of context shots ever, she goes into the bathhouse, sees the ghostly green head of Chihiro Fujisaki in a locker, and screams out. And that's where we get the cut to, I think that's where we get the cut to the chapter title, and then we return to Makoto.
Yeah, that's where it cuts the title.
Yeah, Chihiro has become Mr. House.
Sorry to deny you a moment of primate triumph, but you'll have to go elsewhere to sound your barbaric yawp.
Chihiro's robot now. Chihiro did it. She's robot.
Yeah, so the next morning, you find out a little bit more about, like, oh, hey, another portion of the school has opened up. Ishimaru is, like, extremely catatonic, and Hagakure is like, okay, it's times like these, a guy like him should rally us, isn't that right? And he looks at him, he says nothing, he's like, okay, great, I'm the oldest one here, I guess I'm in charge now.
And that put me at a pretty, I thought I was pretty hyped, because, like, Shaggy's in charge. That shit rules. And unfortunately, they didn't really go anywhere with that. Like,
yeah, he just kind of tells everybody to, like, go check out the rest of the school. Anyway,
yeah,
sorry, continue.
Fortunately, you know, Genocider Show shows up again, and of course she fucking rocks. Like, every scene with her is solid gold. She's easily, like, you know, she steals this entire chapter, and it fucking rocks. Like, she barges in unannounced, like, makes a few extremely lurid comments about Byakuya, and I kind of like that because I feel like, this entire, Byakuya's entire presence in the story, he's objectifying others, we talked about it in the Chihiro episode, and we vaguely touched down upon it a little bit on Sayaka, where he, like, you know, he's like, oh, she's just a corpse now, so it's kind of a good change of pace to have somebody, like, talk about his dick constantly, like she shows up and she's like, I'm gonna fuck this guy! See this piece of meat? I'm gonna ride that guy's meat until it's, like, spongy and bruised! I would've fucking destroyed this guy's dick! And...
Okay. Yeah, it's like, I like that of a show kind of taking Byakuya down a peg. It's all good fun. Show's a very fun character.
Yeah, show's pretty good. They do get into some uncomfortable bits when Sho likes to talk about other women's proportions, and basically just makes a bunch of weird comments about Asahina's breasts that are a bit much. But yeah, overall, I enjoy both Sho and Toko and flipping back and forth between the two, because there's this... It kind of changes the obsession with Byakuya in an interesting way, because with in Toko mode, it's like, oh, I really hope that he says a lot of mean things to me and treats me like dirt. And in the Sho mode, it's like, hey, maybe I'll kill this dude, maybe I won't, but I'm really sexually interested in him.
So yeah, you never get the idea. You can never tell if Sho wants to just murder him or fuck him, and it's kind of really fun.
Are you trying to say it's not both?
Little call me a little coffee.
Yeah, like she's definitely gonna stab him while pegging him. Like that's definitely that's like if Byakuya dies, like the first thing you're gonna check is his asshole. Like.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing is that I think it's pretty well established that she wants to kill an awesome.
Yeah, I want to note it's really like I love what Sho says. She says, "Geez, your knockers are huge. What the heck? Did you convince them to double up on milk production?" Like at a certain point, it's like yeah, it's really objectifying, but it's also really funny.
But also like that level of objectification is kind of par for the course in this medium, like. Whenever I watch an anime or whenever I play like a visual novel, I kind of expect it to be filled with casual misogyny. Not to say that I don't go into like, you know, big budget movies with this mindset too, but like this is like kind of like especially for a work that this came out in like 2010, right? Like this is kind of par for the course. Like this is kind of
Japan, it came out in 2010, and the United States, we got the adaptation in, was it 2015, 2014? I said this on our first episode. You'd think I would remember these things.
Yeah, it was a while ago. I mean, it was a while ago. But at the same time, like, even though it is a while ago, like, it doesn't excuse it, but it's kind of in the context of other works in similar genres. It's not exceptionally bad in any way.
Real quick though, before we move on from the dining room scene, I just like speaking of it being kind of bad. It kind of sucks that like later in the scene when we have the gang in the bathhouse discussing what to do with Alter Ego, which we'll kind of get into. You have no choice to do the fucking onsen peeping Tom thing. That sucked. Like
yeah, and also like. Just like from this point on, I guess they're just referring to Chihiro as he now, which is fucking awful. Yeah. Honestly, the only thing I really liked in this chapter was the stuff with Toko because she is at least funny.
And
like something casual. Other than like just the stream of like boring stuff and like the occasional burst of sewage.
Yeah, and it definitely doesn't help that like the translators like with the way that they have continued to gender and misgender
Nasty. Like it is they are so fucking nasty to like Chihiro and Sakura.
Yeah, there's some real fucking toxic shit going on there. Like
yeah, like if I weren't doing this for the podcast, I would have stopped playing by now.
Well, that's actually a scene that I had never seen prior to this podcast or talking about it, because to get that scene, you need an item called Man's Spirit, I believe. In all of my previous playthroughs, I never had that particular item for this particular scene, so I was completely unaware of its existence. The way that the scene plays out without it is... Makoto basically being like, "No, we're not going to do that. What's wrong with you, Monokuma?" And there is a remark when he's leaving the scene where he's like, "Well, I feel like I missed something there, but I probably did the right thing." But there's something kind of troubling about the idea that there's something very gendered and toxic masculinity about having a situation where it's like. Oh, if you have a real man spirit, then you can just go and violate the boundaries of these women. And
yeah, and also like, and also like, if you like try to exit the scene before, like, you kind of get peer pressured into doing it anyway. But Makoto doesn't really seem to be all that unhappy. Like, he doesn't really protest or anything. Like, it just kind of happens.
Definitely, I wish that there was, at the very least, like, a option in the game to be like, no, fuck this. Like,
yeah, I wish there was a misogyny dial that we could just kind of turn down a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you know, at one point, Toko, when you're, like, exploring the new parts of the building, She finds like a she finds a room that smells like formaldehyde, and she says that she just wants to like jump into a big vat of it. And
damn, yeah, same.
Me too, Toko. Me too.
Damn, that's a mood.
Let's just all just dive face first to a big vat of formaldehyde and just
what is formaldehyde?
Formaldehyde is embalming fluid. It's
toxic. Oh, okay.
It smells kind of like sweet cherries, I think.
Oh,
It's been a while since I've
embalmed that body.
Since I've embalmed the body.
Yeah. So anyway, they explore the new sections of the Scoot Ghoul. We get like the two new pieces of information. Like, I think the two places are the art room and the massive air purifier room, which Monokuma jokes as it is the it's a time machine, but it can only go back about 1 minute in time, so it's only good if you overcooked your pizza rolls.
So the rec room I thought was really cool because there's a little touch that they have monthly that like as far as like literature is concerned. They only have magazines and monthly comics. And you will never get an update on your Shonen Jump. Fuck yep. You.
Celeste was really upset. She really wanted
you
to make...
You will never see what happens to Sugimoto next chapter.
What jump? What series do you think Celeste is following?
Kaiji. Come on. Well, it's Kaiji. True. That's a given.
Kakegurui.
Yeah,
I mean, well, we have to consider the time frame.
Was Kakegurui?
This would be like 2010, 2011.
Naruto. Naruto. Yeah,
absolutely.
Only Naruto.
She really wants.
That's all it's stocked with. It's just like different. It's not even like. It's not even like. Here's the thing. If I was Monokuma, do you know how I would stock the Naruto shelf?
Out of order.
Not only out of order, but like. Missing every other chapter. Because you can definitely do that for years and years of Naruto. Like,
I mean, honestly, what I would do? Only stock the middle of each arc.
Oh, you fucking bastard!
Yeah, so we check out the rec room. You know, we're not getting any updates to our Shonen Jumps because Monokuma makes a joke about, or he says something, magazines are kind of ... and then just, like, leaves it at that.
Oh, he says you can't beat off to the magazines, too. He says that there's nothing horny, there's nothing dirty in there. But you can peep those swimsuit mags. And it's like, fuck off, Monokuma, you horny little... Like, I wasn't expecting Monokuma to want to fuck this much, like... Why is Monokuma such a fuck machine? This is terrible.
Yeah, honestly, it's kind of another thing about the early part of this chapter is that Monokuma kind of feels like he's riding piggyback on your shoulders because he has something to say about, like, literally every single room that you go into.
Speaking of every single room that you go into, at this sequence, I think my least favorite bit of dialogue in the entire planet, in any game ever. Because I went into the kitchen and I inspected the vegetables, and Makoto says, "Oh, you know, I never really ate my veggies. I like meat. I'm in my teens. You know, the meat teens." And I'm like, "What the fuck did you mean by this, Makoto? Jen, fucking weirdo!
What the fuck is
what
a
the
meat?
Fuck are the meat teens? I
don't
want
this. The meat teens.
I didn't fucking ask for this. I didn't ask for this, Makoto."
Makoto is such a dad.
Makoto's such a what?
Is he making it? Is it a pun?
Are you calling Makoto a daddy?
It's not a pun. It's the fucking weird thing to say. He's in his meat teens. What does that mean? What do you mean by this?
It sounds to me like a joke that they tried to translate, but then just kind of like. Half-assed it partway through.
I'm gonna fucking like, Google what a meat teen is.
I don't have the energy to make this joke work in English. I'm just gonna put in some shit like meat teens.
It's not anything. It's just a terrible dad joke because Makoto's being such a normie dad right now.
Yeah, Makoto is the ultimate normie, all things considered.
Well, why is Makoto talking like a normie dad? What the fuck?
Listen, corn.
This kid's like 15 years old. It's supposed to be like completely fucking milquetoast. Why is he talking like someone's dad?
Listen, we all have our interpretations of the character. They're all valid. Including Meat Teen Makoto being a...
No, that's not valid. That's the only one that's not valid. Go home. Leave. Xbox, go home!
Maybe he's trying to riff on the fact that, like, I don't know.
Maybe he's a fucking weirdo who wrestles cranes. That's it. He's a weirdo who wrestles cranes who, like, only ate meat from the age of 13 onwards. Fucking, like...
Can't you get scurvy that way? Does Makoto have scurvy?
I think didn't one of those big alright guys get scurvy because he was only eating meat for like, was it Jordan Peterson who gave himself scurvy because he would only eat like, it was Stephen Molyneux who gave himself
lobster?
No, it was Stephen Molyneux. He went on an only steak diet and he gave himself scurvy. Anyway, that's Makoto Naeki.
Yeah, there was also that
anyway,
Jordan Peterson story.
Our intrepid hero gets himself scurvy. That's the real villain of Danganronpa.
Okay, we're getting really lost in the weeds here.
Let's bring this back to something relevant. So what the fuck was up with that photo of Chihiro, Leon, and Mondo hanging?
I actually kind of want to hear your thoughts on that one. Like, what is, like, besides, like, listen, besides the whole meta thing of, like, oh, man, Chihiro and Mondo, or whatever. But, like, what do you think of, like, the implications of that for the larger story?
I will go last because I've never been wrong in my entire life, and I'm pretty sure I'm correct.
Well, the implications that I saw in it were, I'm fucking tired of this game.
All right, well,
I've had enough.
Okay, now my actual engagement with the narrative led me to this conclusion. Everyone is a year or two older than they think they are, and they had a normal year at Hope's Peak. Like the incident and shit, like, they were there for that, and then they had their memory wiped. And, like, the reason they're, like, the opening sequence when they, like, before you wake up at your desk was legit, like, what happened. And then, like, you had, like, a normal year, and then, like, after that, you know... You then you get, like, tranquilized, and the school gets boarded up and shut down and all that bullshit. You get your memory wiped, and now you're killing each other because maybe some, like, some bullshit's going on. I don't know.
Well, bullshit's that caused magazines not to be made anymore. What kind of powerful force would end the Weekly Jump?
I mean, if you've had your mind wiped. And you still think it's last year, like, you don't need to hear... There's nothing telling you otherwise.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't help that at the school they don't really have, like...
There are no calendars or anything. There are clocks, but there's no way to really tell the date. So, there you have it. Makoto's actually 20 years old and a fail son.
Yeah, that's a theory.
Makoto's a 50-year-old man.
Well... Okay. All right,
Makoto's your dad. That's why he talks like a dad. He's 50.
Right.
Oh no.
So then Monokuma, he definitely does yoink the picture and is like, "Hey, hey, hey! I totally didn't leave that there for you to find. Taking this now. Bye."
Okay.
So
I'm still looking at my notes, and well, actually, I only really wrote one note, and it's Hifumi looks like Big Chungus. And that's the extent of it.
Yeah, Hifumi.
That really says enough.
Yeah, Hifumi.
That's
is
Hifumi.
Big, yep. So, kind of like after everybody, you spread out, you find out what you can. Sakura was asking if we found any more protein powder, which, like, Sakura, how much protein are you going through? How can you be out already? Like, last chapter, you had protein coffee. You spilled it on the carpet. It was critical evidence. How did you, like, how much protein are you using a day, girl?
Have you seen her?
Hey, she needs it.
She's swole as shit.
Yeah, like she's fucking diesel. That shit does not happen without, like, a hell of a lot of pruning.
Like, Sakura Ogami?
In that shape.
Sakura Ogami running out of protein in infinite protein land is, like in one day, like, running an entire, like, supply closet out of protein. Tracks the most out of anything in this entire chapter. Like, I could look at that, like, you could tell me that entirely out of context, and I'd be like, yeah, you know what? When does this happen? Like, the end of chapter two? Like...
Sure.
It fits.
Right, so, after we get down to the bottom of the protein mystery, which somehow she's using it all, you get some time to spend hang out with some people. Jennifer, who did you hang out with in this particular chapter?
I ended up splitting my time three ways between I spent some time with Aoi Asahina, kind of figuring out her deal. She taught me a wellness trick that was basically like stand out in a balcony,
butt ass naked.
Yeah, in the morning, it's just a towel wrapped around you.
Yeah, just like towel. She said specifically, you vigorously rub your dry body down with a towel. Which, yeah. that's some fucking kinky shit, Aoi.
And after that, she talked about how she was in five different she was part of five different school clubs, and that's how she continuously challenged herself, because if she doesn't have a challenge in front of her at all times, she'll basically wind down. It's basically something that she needs in her life to have this constant stimulus in terms of sports.
She's like a shark. If she stops moving forward, she dies.
Now, I kind of liked that. Like, I spent some time with Aoi too. I kind of liked that because it felt kind of touching when Makoto was like, then look at like you being trapped here and trying to figure out stuff to do. Like, look at that as a challenge. And I felt kind of like, you know, and the fact that kind of perked her up a bit, that legitimately was a good character. Like, it was a good character moment, a little bit too brief, I think. But definitely like fertile soil for a good scene. Like, that could be set up for something really good.
Yeah, and it also makes sense why she's constantly craving donuts, because as someone who used to be on a high school swimming team myself, you end up craving things like McGriddles and stuff like that after a workout. So,
were McGriddles your donuts, Jennifer?
Kinda, yeah. Like, I would usually get them immediately before or after practice during high school swimming, because I don't know, I need a lot of calories, and that seemed like that hit the spot more or less.
Yeah, wasn't it, like, I heard something like, who's that guy who swam real good for the Olympics team?
Mike Phelps?
Yeah, apparently he had, like, his regimen when he was training for the Olympics was, like, a 2,000 calorie, like, breakfast. It was like, yeah, because he's working out, athletes, like, 8 hours a day. Yeah.
If you burn a lot of energy, you're going to have to intake a lot of energy. Like, if you look at all the athletes, they have, like, really high calorie diets. Which is why, like, if you look at, like, and also if you look at, like, military rations, like, them shits be, like, 5,000 calories, like, minimum. For fucking, like, reserve guards. Now, I was a theater kid, and all that made me crave was dick. Yeah.
Anyway...
Yeah, I did theater. Thanks, now I'm Jackie. A slut. Whoop.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Like, I guess the secret is Jed is Aoi Asahina. So,
aren't we all Aoi Asahina?
Listen,
Aoi is the world.
Jed, like at Jed's apartment, we are right next to a Dunkin' Donuts. You know how hard it is to just be like, man, we should just go get like a dozen donuts. It's great. Who else did you hang out with, Jennifer?
I also hung out a little bit with Kyoko Kirigiri, which doesn't really go many places. Like, one of the first things you find, the main thing you find out with her after hanging out with her twice, at least leveling up with her twice, is that her approach is different than everyone else, because she's not afraid of what she'll lose here. She's afraid of what she'll find out that has already happened to her, essentially.
She says something about like what she's already lost, like, and then she just walks away like a huge edge lord. I think Dan and I actually spent time with the same exact dialogue.
Yeah, because the exact net, because I only got to her second thing after that, and then that whole thing is her testing you to make sure that you aren't the traitor in the group by basically making sure that your intentions are pure for hanging out with people, and then once she's confirmed that, she's like, oh, okay, you can ask me a question. And when you ask her a question about who her dad was, she's just like, oh, someone top secret, some military or something. Anyway, bye.
Anyway, fuck you.
Wait, what? You know she's an edgelord because her name Kirigiri literally means like close cut in Japanese. So
So Jen, did you hang out with anyone else?
Yeah, I did hang out with Sakurogami once, and
how'd that go?
It went pretty well. Thing is, I'm kind of having trouble remembering exactly what we talked about, but it was just one of those things where she talked about how intense her training regimen was as well. And yeah,
what I can remember is the most social links, like, it's by level 2 or 3 in which you start getting story. And as you were saying?
Yeah, I tried to talk to the Genocide Show the entire time, and she has no dialogue.
Yeah, she really has nothing to say. She chases you around with scissors.
Yeah, like, I talked to her, like, the entire free time period, like, 4 or 5 times, however many times you get, and she didn't really have anything to say. Like, it was always just a fade to black, which sucks ass.
Oh, there is one thing that doesn't suck ass about it, about, like, spending time with Genocider Show, and it is one of my favorite things about this chapter, is that if you spend time with her, and you give her a nice gift that she really likes, the first thing she does is she just fucking licks it. She just puts that shit in her mouth. She is a literal infant.
Okay, I forgot about that.
I gave her 2 bracelets, and they were covered in saliva within a minute.
I forgot about that.
Just
that's
absolutely drenched in, like, stinky girl juice. Not that kind, but the other kind.
Oh no.
That might be Gamma way.
God, Jackie, are you okay? Like, this episode has been really lewd.
No, she's not.
This is a really raunchy episode. I mean, Hifumi sex pestered a robot.
Speaking of Hifumi, that's who I hung out with this chapter.
Why?
Why?
Why? Why?
Why did you do that?
I had to, like, okay, listen.
Had to?
No, listen.
Was someone forcing you at gunpoint to talk to fucking Hifumi? Was that it?
Let me explain. So, this is my second run through of the game, and I had already done all the social links with the characters that I liked. So I was like, well, guess I just gotta talk. Like, okay, listen. We all pretty much hate Hifumi here. Big Chungus, he sucks. And I thought...
Well, I kind of liked him at the start, but game's just saying... been slowly eroding.
Yeah, I mean, at this point...
Like, anything I like about him.
Yeah, at this point, killing him was a public service.
Yeah. It's kind of, like, the same reason why, like, we're on Jen last time you hung out with Mondo, just to see if there's, like, anything to this character. I decided to hang out with Hifumi to figure out if there's anything to this character. I'm gonna keep it brief because, like, the only thing notable about his social link is that he started a doujin club in middle school, and the way it got started is that he let the teachers in have a cut of the profit. He has a Diet Coke addiction that whenever he starts withdrawing, he starts thinking about a demon pudgy princess, and he starts having vivid hallucinations. And, like, it just kind of, he's all over the place. There is one kind of thing that is, like, he's a little sympathetic for, like, a line, and then he completely undoes it because he's fucking Hifumi Yarada. But, like, at the tail end of his social, like, he mentions that he has this, like, dream to, like, actually start making original art and original, like, anime and stuff, and that He's like, you know, I hope I make something that people make fanfic out of, you know, when I put that out. And it's like, as a creator, I'm like, okay, Hifumi, I can understand that, like, desire to, like, make something that people want to engage with on that level. And then he says something stupid about, like, Demon Pudgy Princess. And
yeah.
Completely undoes it. But yep. It's like, Jen.
Listen, I don't want to see any fan art of anything that Hifumi made. I feel like that would all be, like, extremely illegal.
Jen, you were saying?
Oh, I was just hearing that he wanted to make his own anime or manga made me realize that he's a shittier version of Mitarai, who we'll get to when we get to the end of Hope's Peak, the anime. But yeah, that's kind of a weird realization that he's just a shitty version of that character.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. And I know the character you're talking about. And it's like, oh,
the other character comes out, like, later. So maybe the devs, like, they saw that Hifumi was kind of a huge, like, was kind of defined by something that really sucked. Like, he's kind of a really shitty nerd in a way that makes him entirely unsympathetic. And I think maybe they just tackled him again and decided to tackle this idea of a creator without tying it to that kind of persona.
Yeah, like, man, I really wish that this game didn't just feel like a dry run for later games that are actually good. Because that seems to be what the impression I'm getting.
Yeah. Yeah, like, the character Jen mentioned, they're in Danganronpa 3, and it's like, they have, like, a really interesting arc, and they have, like, it's good stuff. It's like, I can't exactly hold Danganronpa 1 to, like, oh, it's, like, yeah, it kind of sucks that it's a dry run for, like, a better game, but, like, at the same time, it's like, they nobody knew what they were doing. This is, like, cobbled together from, like, three different scripts. This is just, like, this game is kind of a hot mess, but I kind of appreciate it being a hot mess sometimes. I don't know.
I mean, I feel like I could appreciate that more. It wasn't like a recurrent note of, like, really nasty transphobia.
Fair enough. Jen, what do you think on this?
I definitely agree that one's biggest problem by far is its transphobia, and one of the things that makes the other games and the anime in a few ways so much better than this particular game is that it more or less it never goes to the same, it never is transphobic to the same degree that this game is, and it's to a point where they eventually get to a point where they have some meaningful things to say about queerness, and it's not all ridiculous tropes and stereotypes, but yeah, it's definitely one of those things where this chapter is emblematic of a lot of the series' growing pains, and I still do like what happens in this chapter because it's fun to have some of the characters bouncing off each other, and this is also the chapter that kind of solidified my, even if they are continuously misgendering Chihiro, which really sucks, there's this sense that everyone within this class still loves her and is so happy to have a form of her still existing somewhere in the world that they can talk to. And that was really meaningful for me.
Yeah, so there was, like, genuine, like, love and concern for Chihiro. And I kind of feel like that is, large. Like, I feel like there was genuine love and concern. In a sense, in Chapter 2, it was just really, really poorly conveyed because the writers just fucked up immensely on every step imaginable.
Yeah.
But again, like, that gets buried in kind of the trans. It's a little hard to ignore the trans. Like, it's kind of a huge fucking pain in the ass.
Hey everyone, it's me, your ultimate host, Kyrie. We had some technical difficulties around this section, but it was the perfect time to take a break and the perfect time for me to do my shoutouts. First off, thank you to Scanline Media for hosting this podcast. Make sure to check out scanlinemedia.com for the latest in podcasts and other exciting things. They have plenty of free shows like The Johto Quorum, Garnet Rager, A Neutral Game, and so much more. And if you support them on Patreon, that's patreon.com/scanlinemedia, you gain access to Oops All Anime, an exclusive anime podcast. I'm occasionally a co-host on there. It's a really great time. Check it out for all the latest in older and newer anime hot takes. They just had To Mellow on there to talk about some Godzilla. That was really cool. I was on there to talk about Waka Kozake. It was a great time. Definitely check that out. And of course, this show would not be possible without the site, Six, and Jen's hard work. Thanks for you. Thank you to Vetrom for the music, as always. Be sure to check them out on YouTube at youtube.com/VTMprojects. They just put out some really great Pokemon and My Hero Academia remixes. Definitely check those out. Huge thank you for letting us use their hot Danganronpa remixes for the show. And of course, a huge thank you to Kira Buckland for sitting down with us for that fantastic interview. I still cannot get over that I had the chance to sit down with one of the hardest working, one of the best voice actors in the industry right now. Kira was incredible. Definitely, if you haven't already, check out that interview, and maybe if you have, listen to it again. I don't know. I can't tell you what to do. But hey, listen. Thank you, you know, for listening. You know, it was a delight to chat with her, and I think you'll just, I love that episode. I can't get the words out how much I love that episode. And also, thank you to Brian Beacock for that incredible bumper that you heard at the beginning of the episode. That's right. We got the voice of Monokuma himself, Mr. Monokuma, and next week I will be putting out our interview with Mr. Monokuma, with Mr. Brian Beacock. He was an absolute delight. He was hilarious. He was a great time. Definitely look forward to that. And that's not even the last guest I have for y'all. There's one more guest in the pipeline with a few more that I've been talking to. Has some very promising emails. So listen, just stay tuned, you know, make sure that you're following our Twitter at YouDespairCast. If you want me to give you a shout out during this section of the show, email us at despaircast@gmail.com. But God, I have been so thankful for my co-hosts and everybody who's been following and listening. And if you're new to the show, thank you for listening as well. Anyway, that's all for now. Next episode, your homework is the investigation and trial of Danganronpa 1, Trigger Happy Havoc, Chapter 3. Talk to you next time, everybody.
Between Kirigiri, Aoi, and Sho, and
what did you think about all
was
that?
Yeah. It really didn't feel like the game wanted you to. It felt like the game wanted you to pick one person and really just hang out with them the whole time. Because I got a whole big bunch of fucking nothing this chapter. It was very much like one, two sentences, okay, cool, I'm exhausted, time to go to bed, with each person, and it felt like I was doing something wrong.
Yeah.
I
definitely know how that goes. I didn't mention this, but, I had one more free time event, available, so I decided to hang out with Celeste, but, Celeste just kind of told me a one-off story about, time she spilled tea on her shirt, And I noticed something, like, this is something that they iron out in 2 and V3, where all the characters have 6 levels of social link, and that's it. Like, some characters, like Celeste, has, like, I think 6 or 7 before you get, like, her maxed social link. You know, Sayaka has 3, like, it's kind of all over the place for all the different characters, and I kind of feel that, like, it sounds like with, like, Sho and, like, others, that they didn't exactly know what they wanted to say with them, because it wasn't very well structured.
Yeah, like all of Sho's lines were just the same when I tried to hang out with her.
Yeah, it's not entirely clear. That said, like I said, 2 and V3 fix this problem, like, immediately.
Oh, I was gonna say something about Taka that I kind of didn't really like. So I know Jen and Kiri, you both really liked Kyando, or I guess if not really liked, just kind of liked him.
Yeah, Taka's good. I like Taka.
Yeah, you know, I didn't like that development with his character at all. It felt very, it felt like it was treating this, like it was treating this amateur hour, like, this is a psychosis, you know, that sort of writing as, like, which is kind of they're treating it as, like, window dressing for a plot device that would have been wholly unnecessary if they wrote their characters to, like, process, like, to actually engage with the world that they're in a sense. Like, there are points in this chapter where it just didn't feel like, it felt kind of discombobulated and, like, disjointed.
Yeah, speaking of, I think we should explain, like, the moment we're talking about. Jen, talk about what happened, like, with Taka.
Yeah, so going back a bit, we didn't really talk too much about Alter Ego. Basically, they find this computer within the bathhouse that Chihiro has programmed to have an AI that looks a lot like her. And essentially, that AI is decoding files that were encrypted on this Hope's Peak laptop. In addition to that, when other people have been coming in the room, Ishimaru is going through some real tough stuff. He's still in that catatonic state, but he hears through the grapevine that there's a way to see Chihiro again. So you bring him to her, and she decides to help him out by impersonating Mondo and giving Ishimaru a pep talk. And the way that he reacts to this, by the way, you're going behind everyone's back because you're not supposed to be doing this at all. The way that he reacts to this pep talk is his hair goes completely white, his eyes start glowing, and he now sees himself as an amalgamation of both Ishimaru and Mondo.
Can't bring himself to swear, though, but which is a very funny detail. Where he says, like, what the fudge is up, or something like that. Yeah, he is, like, he's now referring to himself as Ishimondo. It's like, he's gone sicko mode. Like, he's just gone complete, like, Ultra Instinct, bright white hair. And it's bizarre, but it's, like, I guess the only reason I kind of like it is because I like it when Danganronpa gets, like, weird and bizarre, but, like, at the same time, like, it's kind of out of nowhere and doesn't really go anywhere.
Yeah. In the meantime, they've introduced a motive where Monokuma brings everyone to the gym and plops down $10 million, and he's like, okay, I have a gift for y'all. If one of you makes that alive from the situation, you get $10 million,
and just, of course, the only way to make it out alive is to kill.
Oh, of course, but yeah.
Like, here's a neat $10 million. If you kill somebody,
if you kill all of your friends, here is $10 million.
Yeah, and it's just like that other situation from last time, where everyone's immediate reaction is, "Hey, no one's gonna kill for that much." That Byakuya makes that amount in, like, a day, and
Byakuya makes that amount in 14 minutes.
he points it out. He says, like, yeah, I'm, like,
Byakuya wipes his ass with that money.
He's like, I'm stupidly rich. And then Celeste is like, yeah, I've made like several million on my gambling winnings. I'm pretty comfortable. I appreciated that, at least the two like, very wealthy characters being like, well, yeah, that's like nothing. I make that in like 20 minutes.
Well, in conclusion, I think that they should be guillotined.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
They both have gulag reservations.
Yeah, they should be executed for completely different reasons. I'm sure Monokuma
would provide the guillotine.
Didn't somebody actually get guillotined in Distrust?
Yes.
Why wasn't it them?
We'll go into that when we like talk about that, but yeah, like, God, Distrust is so fascinating. But speaking of that, like, I feel like the $10 million on some level is also like a holdover from that script, because it's like, I don't know, like $10 million in which you're in a high tense situation like this, right? Or whatever. I don't know. It's like, I feel like money would have more meaning in like the original setting of Distrust than it would in this current setting.
Yeah, because like right now, it's like Monokuma brings everyone out and tells them that, oh, if you graduate, you get $10 million, and it's just kind of goes over like, eh, who cares?
Even
like if you were planning to kill someone, you're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, like even the dirt poor characters are like, yeah, I want to kill for that. It's like, yeah, that's a lot of money, but I want to kill for that. Like, it's like just the right amount of money that isn't like comprehensible, so you can think like what would I do with this or whatever. It's like, I don't know, it just seems all right. Like even big Chungus is like, I make enough money to buy my anime CDs.
Yeah, like it kind of feels like at this point Monokuma is running out of ideas, which would be funny if I didn't feel like the writers were also running out of ideas.
Well, it's one of those situations where, A, it functions the same way as the previous motive, where, of course, everyone publicly is saying, oh, 10 million, nah, I can't kill my friends for that. But there's that sense you don't really know someone until their backs are up against the wall, so there might be someone or multiple people who could really use those $10 million, and in addition to that, Monokuma knows practically everything about these characters' backstories, so he might be putting more knowing pressure on them than they even realize.
I'm really excited for Monokuma to offer the grand prize of a free t-shirt if you commit murder. I killed all of my friends, and all I got was this t-shirt.
Well, it's like,
I heart killing all my friends.
It's like a deal or no deal thing. It's about like, do I take the deal now or do I wait until the next round?
Listen, if you don't kill now, you're not getting the dollars. You're not getting your secret leak. But you do get this t-shirt.
Yeah, yeah. Like the final motive is just gonna be like a car or something.
The final motive is gonna be he takes you out for lunch.
Yeah, and then the motive for the case before that is just like an opened and half empty like packet of curry flavoring.
Hey, if you do some murder, we can go halfsies on a pizza.
Right. So, speaking of murder, I feel like we should kind of take it to like the real kind of reason why some shenanigans ensue at Hope's Peak Academy. So, we find out about Killer Man on the loose. But first, before that, the alter ego situation is kind of like the kids is like they finally have some like hope to grip onto, because like, oh, alter ego. Like, she's going through all these files, and there's a possibility that, like, they can learn a little bit more about what's going on, the mastermind, all that, right? So, but they realize two things. One, Hifumi and Taka both have their own reasons for wanting to take alter ego, Hifumi being, like, a weird creep and just wants to take Chihiro because it's, like, it's a girl-like figure, like, saying, like, oh, Hifumi, that's really interesting. Tell me more about this anime that you watch, to which Celeste points out. It's like, yeah, of course the AI is interested in you. It doesn't know anything about anime.
I mean, I do sort of like the idea that, like, down kind of just like this lonely dipshit,
but also like, yeah, it's being used to make Hifumi sympathetic, and you can never, and you physically cannot make Enmi do anything other than retch when he shows up.
Well,
on the screen.
No, it's not really that. I wish that they had bothered to try and make him sympathetic at any point in the past before this point.
Oh yeah.
Because yeah, like not... so far he's just been like completely unlikable.
Yeah, he's failed to build. It's like the reverse of like the Beatles like releasing their really shitty stuff late into their career when they built up all this goodwill. Like Hifumi has built up so much enmity from us that like if they ever try and do something cool with him, it gets shot down immediately because fuck Hifumi.
Then Taka is like, oh, I want alter ego because, oh, it means I get to talk to Mondo again. To which Kirigiri and Sakura are like, no, listen, we're going to have to kick your asses if you take this thing. So they make an agreement. They tell alter ego to scream if you see anybody suspicious and or Taka or Hifumi, which a quick line, I do love that she says, if I see someone suspicious on my webcam, I'll yell really, really loud. And it's like, even Chihiro Alter is really, really precious. And Kirigiri is like, okay, I'm going to crack my door open so that I could hear if Chihiro starts yelling. And then she, of course, says, like, listen, just because my door is open doesn't make me an easy target. Or you'll find yourself being a target. Come at the queen. You best not miss.
I kind of really liked that bit, because, like, she's just straight up like, listen, I am the deadliest motherfucker here. Like, Sakura Ogami, easily the strongest, not willing to kill you. Aoi Asahina, pretty strong, not willing to kill you. Me, I have a knife in my boot with your name on it. I walked in here with 14 guns with one bullet load in the chamber each. All of them had your names on them. Don't try me.
No gun for Chihiro, because she loves Chihiro.
No gun for Chihiro. No gun. Absolutely no gun for negative guns. There's actually, you may notice that there are actually two people missing. One of the guns is actually for Kirigiri. There are no guns for Chihiro. Nobody kills Chihiro. She's unkillable.
The gun is to protect Chihiro.
Exactly.
That's in my better version of Danganronpa that I'm writing.
That's true.
So, Jed, tell us what happens next.
So it's also worth pointing out in context that Monokuma doesn't seem to know that Alter Ego exists because there are no cameras within the bathhouse, so they've stuffed her within a locker, and they talk around the fact of going to see Chihiro by being like, oh yeah, let's go take a bath. But at some point they wake up, or essentially a note is slipped under Makoto's door, and everyone comes to meet at the... bathhouse, and they find out that someone has stolen Alter Ego. And since Chihiro was instructed to scream if either Ishimaru or Hifumi came within an inch of the laptop, neither of them are responsible. It's someone that is part of the group that was quote unquote trusted.
And Byakuya points out, like, he very, like, the one good thing he kind of points out is, like, yeah, there's probably a traitor amongst our group. Like, odds are that somebody here is working with Monokuma and immediately, like, compromises the security of the bathhouse.
So, I'm kind of fuzzy on the details before we get to the main event, but at some point... they go to breakfast again and realize a few people are missing. So, and it's like, it's been an hour that they're just sitting there waiting for people to come up to breakfast and no one's there. So they start to search.
Yeah. Jackie, fill us in on the Scooby-Doo shenanigans that occur.
Some fucking car, like some real Scooby-Doo shit. So, Celeste, like we hear Celeste scream, if I recall correctly, and we run up and she's like, oh, I got hit. Some dude came in and hit me with a mallet and then took Hifumi away. Which is like, why are you hanging out with Hifumi? Come on. Have standards. And
look at this. Look at this pocket camera with this piece of evidence. This will be really important later.
Yeah, she took a surprisingly still picture of Hifumi getting dragged away by this guy in a fucking mecha suit, which, like, props on the cosplay. And
then we, like, hunt around looking for the guy in the cosplay, and then Hifumi, and we find Hifumi gets hit in the head by mallet number two, and, like, I guess, like, okay, we're really doing this.
It's around that time you then, realize, oh shit, these are gonna be clues for the eventual murder.
I just fucking groan at his shit, like, come on, dog.
It's about this that you just realize that, oh god, there's another 15 minutes of this.
We're gonna fucking run around for a half hour. Just kill somebody, you dramatic bitch. And, well, of course, my wish is granted, because after a bit of running around, we go for a light jog around the entire fucking school, because why not? And Hifumi gets killed. And we get the dead body discovered chime, and then daily life just keeps going, which I was losing my shit this entire time, because it's so, this is, like, I know this is supposed to be dramatic, but this is fucking hilarious. Like, no big loss on Hifumi, first and foremost, but also, like, we just keep carrying on as if, we're running around, and we find, so we check around, and we find that Taka's also been killed by Justice Mallet number four.
10 minutes later, we find out that he's also
fucking
dead.
10 minutes later, we're just running around, and, like, it's some extreme clown shoes bullshit.
And I love it. It's so dumb. Listen, when I do appreciate the fact that, like, when Hifumi is killed, like, even on, like, a meta-narrative sense of, like, oh, normally the Deadly Life, like, chapter break would show up, that not even the narratives gives enough of a shit about Hifumi to drop the chapter break, and then it's, like, they're running around and finding the, like, if nothing else, like, I guess the silliness of this chapter and its just overall weirdness was, like, a welcome reprieve from, like, how shitty and toxic the last chapter was. Like, I was looking forward to, like, how ridiculous this got and how ridiculous it gets. Because, oh no, there's a big clown shoes robot man going around bopping people with hammers.
Yeah, honestly, I think the problem was that, like, after the last chapter, after the last chapter and the chapter that preceded it, I just can't really get into this goofy shit.
You know, honestly, it didn't really, like, it was goofy and it was silly, and I, on, like, a meta sense, like, I was, like, I found it funny because, you know, we were doing all this stupid bullshit, but it really did kind of drag on a bit.
Yeah.
I kind of have, like, you know, high hopes for the rest of the, for the Deadly Life part. Do you want to hear my theory?
Well, first off, Jen, I want to get your thoughts on, like, just the general bits of, like, chapter 3. Like, I've kind of staked my claim. It's like, it's silly, it's bullshit, but I kind of enjoy it because of that. What do you think?
Certainly, yeah. I enjoy the goofiness of this chapter, and aside from the bath scene, which I did not see, overall, it's a very fun scene, and the murder itself is, it's our first double murder, and they do an amazing job of pushing you through in a way that's like, okay, this is a very confusing situation where no one knows where to go and they're all bumping into each other, or it's basically Madcap just trying to figure out where to go next, and somehow they manage to do that without you ever getting actually lost as the player. You're pretty consistently guided in a way that makes sense narratively, and it works really well. So I feel like this section is pretty,
I think,
well,
you might have the, I think you might have the benefit of retrospect, like the benefit of having gone through this before, because while I didn't get lost, part of it felt like it was kind of like very specific about where it wants you to go, and just like not willing to take you there because it wants you to feel inconvenience. Like, it wants you to run around so to get you in that character headspace. Again, not terrible, like, it's just not really,
yeah,
the appeal was kind of lost on me.
Yeah, Jen, I was about to say, like, I think it really does come down, and Jackie, like you said, like, it does kind of come down to, like, Jen and I have played these before, and we kind of know where this is going, and it's kind of fun to just kind of, like, embellish in it, and just how goofy and weird it is. Fun fact, every third case in the series is a double murder, so that'll be fun.
Yeah.
So, any other thoughts?
Man, I really hope that the next are better. Like, I got, like, I was getting, like, legitimately kind of exasperated near the end of this one.
Alright, Jackie, what's your theory?
Okay, so, here's my theory. Mm-hmm. And I saved this one for last. I think I might have brushed up on it earlier, but I saved this one for last because I don't want to spoil anybody. I didn't want to spoil anybody, and I'm never wrong, so...
Well, you're not doing spoilers, you're just correct.
Well, yes, I'm correct. And if I tell somebody that, like, the truth of what's going to happen, like, before we've experienced it, that's a spoiler. Anyway, the person who took the laptop is Celeste. Specifically because when they're talking about, like, who's allowed to pick up the laptop, or who's allowed to see the laptop, to look at the laptop, who's allowed to go in, Celeste says, I didn't hear a scream, and it's like, why the fuck would you, if you're in bed, if it's nighttime, you're supposed to be in your room, according to the rules that everyone has established, you're not out there stealing laptops, and somebody else did it, like, you wouldn't hear a scream because your room is soundproof, there's a reason Kirigiri kept her door open. So you just did it. Like you would only say that if you were expecting to hear a scream at some point. And she was, because she took it. And also she ran it. Also she, like, a thing I kind of noticed was that she, before Inez speaks, I'm sorry, I'm cutting everybody off today. A thing I noticed is that, like, when we were running around in the entire tail end of the chapter, it was Celeste who was leading us. You know, she was telling us to go upstairs, she was, go upstairs, third floor, second floor, first floor, like, back to the second floor, back to the top. Like, and she was the one running us around, and that made me think, like, well, you know, she's doing this. Also, she gets, like, a weird amount of, like, prevalence, but let's go back to the... She was, because she's running us around because the idea is she gets us confused and discombobulated because she is a gambler, which, you know, she wants to get her opponents flustered so that they make rash decisions. She's gonna win the 10 million. She wants to win the 10 million by getting us flustered and getting us, like, in a tizzy and, you know, accusatory. And in doing so, we, you know, we miss a clue or we make an assumption that there's one more person in there with us than there is. And we select the wrong person. She walks and she gets 10 million. And she has 11 million. And that's my pitch.
Alright. Inez?
I don't really have anything else to say besides that near the end of the chapter, I, like, kind of mentally started to read some of the voice like some of the dialogue lines. In like a Garth Marenghi voice.
What?
Like Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Who? Yeah, Jennifer, what?
It's...
I've been watching that show again recently, and it's...
I don't know what... I'm very lost.
It's a fake British Stephen King situation where all the actors are overacting severely, and all the writing is purposefully terrible.
Yeah, like specifically...
Yeah, that's Danganronpa.
Specifically, what I'm thinking of is, like, it is like the bit at the part is like the bit at the beginning where he's like reading from his book or whatever, and it's just like the worst prose imaginable.
Well, oh God, this episode's gonna be a lot to edit.
we said a lot of
kill
nothing.
Byakia.
Okay, listen, any other
killer man is killer man.
Killer man is killer man. Anything else for anybody?
Help.
Um, I'm really looking forward to how this trial goes, because I remember this being a very fun trial.
Same. I thought it was, there's some fun shenanigans that ensue. But anyway, so everybody, your homework is going to be investigation and trial of Danganronpa Chapter 3, Trigger Happy Havoc, circa 2005 video game.
Yeah.
Sure, whatever you just said.
You know what? I have a closing thought.
What's your closing thought?
Why couldn't Robo Justice kill Byakuya too? Like, come on, man, do us a solid.
Do us a Robo Justice.
Do us a Robo Justice.
That's because Robo Justice is a RoboCop, and therefore will never do actual justice.
Dead or alive, you're coming with me.
Damn. Well, everybody,
I can't do a good RoboCop impression.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Anybody,
I failed you.
I've been Kyrie.
And I've been Jennifer.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go.
I've been a RoboCop gun shooting off someone's dick forever.
I guess I've been Jackie. I'm not entirely sure. I'm kind of dissociated.
I just want one reverse roll call. Can we not do one roll call normally?
Absolutely not.
I'm Inez, and this Listen, will probably it... have to be edited in later.
If I am the only person in Ultra Despair, the only normal person in Ultra Despair cast, not the only person, the only normal person.
You've been doing all our voices. Class dismissed, everybody.
Class dismissed.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye.
That was a Cypher, Jackie, that was a hell of a Beatles hot take.
Yeah, fuck the Beatles.
She's coming for you.
Listen.
Alright.
Listen. Fuck the Ringo Starr is cool, fuck the Beatles.
Okay. Sacred Cow Barbecue, baby.
So
kill your heroes, fuck the Beatles.
So also
Those are both microchip. Commands.
So
ban microchip, all girls DM me.